Welcome to Management 101, your home for learning about management and leadership in business. Now, here is your host, Max Weniker.
Hello and welcome back to Management 101. After a month and a half hiatus, it has been a very busy month. My sincere apologies to the maybe tens of you who have been sitting with bated breath waiting for the next episode. And to those of you who are just listening for the first time, I guess you can totally ignore what I just said. And welcome to Management 101. Today's topic is about onboarding new employees. I'm going to talk about why it matters, how to do it effectively, what are some mistakes that managers often make related to onboarding new employees, and some other best practices. And then also we'll talk a little bit through how do you know if your onboarding strategy is even effective. Then I'll end with a couple notes on additional best practices that make sense if you are a remote manager. Well, then let's get into it, shall we? Why does onboarding matter? Onboarding is, other than the interview process, the first experience or first impression that your employee is going to have of your company. You want this to be a good one. It's going to set the tone for how that employee perceives their overall experience over the course of their time at the company. It's going to, if done effectively, enable them to be an impactful team member sooner. And it's also a time that you as the company can take advantage of a fresh set of eyes when you are bringing someone on board for the first time. If you miss that window, if you don't take advantage of that time when an employee is just joining to utilize their outside perspective that hasn't been biased by the way that the company works, you'll never get it back. And I don't mean that to sound morbid, just a fact. Once somebody is ingrained in how a company works, they're not going to be able to provide an unbiased outside perspective, and then you'll inherently lose a key advantage that you get from bringing on a new employee. Onboarding matters for all those reasons. And yet it's something that I see most companies I work with not do particularly effectively. So I want to start by just talking through some of the mistakes that I see that managers make when they first onboard a new employee. Mistake number one, assuming that a new employee knows how to do more than they actually do. Someone who's been working at the company for a while, you as a hiring manager, for example, you're very familiar with all of the different things that you're supposed to do with the company. You're familiar with all the different processes that you're supposed to go through. You're familiar with all the tools that you use. For instance, payroll tools, documentation and knowledge-based tools, the internal tools that your company is built to do work, external tools like different support channels, just to name a few. I'm sure there are many more. When someone joins, sure, it might seem obvious to you how a lot of these tools work, but it's very unlikely that it'll be obvious to them. If you spend just a few minutes going over here are each of the things that you'll need to do your job, and here is how to use them, that will be time very well spent. The other thing that might happen if you don't do that is it will take them a long time to learn how to use these tools effectively. For example, this is a pretty silly one, but one of my previous companies, we used Expensify, which was an app that you can use to track employee expenses that need to be reimbursed. Expensify is a relatively straightforward tool, but it's not something that everyone's used before. And so I had a new employee join and I sent them an invite to Expensify and didn't say anything more. 6 months later, discovered that they still weren't using it, that they were manually uploading their receipts to another tool to get reimbursed, and it was taking them an hour every other week just to manage their receipts when in Expensify would have taken them 5 minutes. I made the false assumption that they knew how to use this tool, and I'm sure you at your own company can think of many others like Expensify where, because I knew how to use it and I thought it was pretty straightforward, I just assumed that this other person did, and the result was that this person instead went through their own much slower process instead of using the tool. What could have taken me 20 minutes at most to just show them how to do in their first week or on their first day instead was taking them an hour every week or two for 6 months. Big miss on my part. Don't assume that your employee knows more than they actually do when they first join. It's better to ask a lot of questions like, hey, have you done this type of thing before? Can you tell me about how you approached it at your last company? Are you familiar with this tool? Have you used it before? And then create lots of open space such that they can ask questions over the course of their first week or their first month or whatever it is for the things that they don't know. The second mistake that I see managers make when onboarding a new employee is they'll offer themselves as a resource, but then not actually check in. So managers think they're being nice by saying, I am here to answer any questions that you have. I'm here whenever you need me. But employees, particularly new ones, sometimes are a little scared to take advantage of that. There is definitely a fear that some people have that they will be seen as unintelligent or incapable if they ask certain questions. Just offering yourself as a resource is absolutely not enough. You also need to be checking in with them regularly. And we'll talk about this in a sec, but setting aside time on a daily or every other day basis in their first couple weeks to say, tell me about what you learned today. Tell me about any of the questions that have come up. I can tell you that when I joined, I didn't understand this thing and it took me a while to get up to speed on it. Is that something that you are experiencing? The short answer is not just offering yourself as a resource, but also forcing the issue by creating the structure where you can check in on someone's progress and ensure that they do have space to ask questions. They're being encouraged to ask questions and that you're not going to judge them or make them feel bad or think that they're going to be a bad employee because they have these questions. It is in your strong interest to have your employees when they're new, or really anytime, but particularly when they're new, ask as many questions as possible so that they can have all the information they need in order to do a good job. If they are unclear on something and you haven't created a structure for them to ask questions to get answers about how to do X, Y, or Z about their job, they're going to find either ways to not do their job and cover it up, or they're going to find really inefficient ways to do their job that had they known the company correct process or company correct tool, they might have gone way faster. And then the third mistake I see employers make when first onboarding a new employee is not setting clear expectations. You as a manager cannot assume that your employee knows what is expected of them the day that they join. Just because the role is one they've done before or the role is one that you have a number of on your team does not mean that it's necessarily clear to them exactly what you want from them. I made this mistake many times as a manager where I hired someone. Maybe it was an operations manager, maybe it was an analyst of some sort, some type of role where I'd already had a lot of that type of person on the team. And I just assumed, well, all these other people got up to speed. I'm going to assume that this person will too. And what I discovered every single time, and something I now actively try to work against, is the individual joining. Sure, maybe they understood certain aspects of the role because they had done it before or they had asked around to other members of the team, but there was always a piece of the role that they were not clear what was expected of them in that area. And that was without fail happened every time I didn't have clear expectations set from the beginning. I can remember one example where we got about 6 months into someone's role and it was time for the initial performance discussion. During those 6 months, I had been pretty unhappy with this person's performance. And I thought it was pretty obvious based on the things that I was asking them to do or change about their work that this was the case. I thought it's pretty obvious that if I was asking this person to repeatedly adjust what they were doing, that of course that meant that they weren't doing it the right way. We get to this performance discussion, I said, it seems to me like there may be a misalignment between the expectations of the role and your particular skill set. There are a bunch of areas where I had hoped for a lot more progress over the last 6 months, and this person was shocked. They thought they were performing admirably. They thought that all these asks that I was making of them was just to improve upon something that was already going well. They had absolutely no idea that they were not meeting the expectations of the role. And so, of course, they were not adjusting at the speed I wanted them to because they genuinely thought it was already going well. So by not setting clear expectations for the beginning of this is what I want to have happen, these are the outcomes I want from you being in your role, these are the activities I expect you to be doing, these are the outcomes I expect from those activities, the changes I expect to be made, I was not giving this person a clear blueprint for success. They filled in the gaps with assumptions, which was a super fair thing to do on their part. And what ended up resulting was this person thought they were doing a good job when they weren't. And that's one of the worst situations you can end up in as a manager, is you think someone needs to improve and they don't realize that. In hindsight, what I wish I had done was sit down on day one and say, this is the description of the role that you've been hired for. And we could even read it together from the posted job description online or however that person originally found the job. Over the first 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, these are the things that I expect to happen. In the first month, I expect you to have built relationships with these teams. I expect you to have implemented this tool or new process. I expect that these programs will be up to speed. In the first 3 months, I expect that the team's productivity, by the way, this was a program manager role. That's why I'm saying these specific activities. In the first 3 months, I expect that the team's project proposal process is completely standardized and has a customer satisfaction score of at least 80%. In the first 6 months, I expect that all job definitions are standardized and performance criteria for the various work streams and roles are standardized. These are maybe not perfect examples for every role, but they certainly were relevant for this role. I realized in retrospect that I had asked this person just to take on certain activities, but I didn't really say what I expected to be the result of those activities. What did good look like? What did bad look like? And I also didn't say at any point what I wanted this all to turn into at the end. I just said, take on these activities, and then they had to fill in the blanks from there. All this is to say, if you don't set very clear expectations with your team members and check in on those expectations regularly from the first week that they join through when they're fully ramped up, which should be around 3 months, it is unlikely that you're going to get the exact results from them that you want. Because what you're assuming by not setting these expectations and checking in on them regularly is that this person knows what is expected of them and knows how to achieve or meet those expectations. Shifting gears a little bit now, how do you prepare for an employee's first day? This is another area that I see managers sometimes struggle with. They're so busy. Like, part of the reason they're hiring someone is because there's a lot of work to do and they need an additional person. Oftentimes that work is coming off their own plate. So before this person joins, they're pretty busy. They've just run through a hiring process. They also just have a lot of other stuff on their plate. And they won't think about, oh, this person can't just join on day one and be ready to go. They don't think about, there are some things that need to happen in order for this person to be ready on day one. I just want to talk through some pretty basic things that it might make sense to try to get done before the person joins, such that their first day and onward can be as productive as possible and can be as good an experience as possible. The first is, make sure to communicate to the team that this person is joining. A good outcome would be, this team is ready for this person to join. They know what's expected of that person. They know when they're joining. They know when to reach out and introduce themselves. The bad outcome would be that this person shows up on day one and no one even realizes they were supposed to be here. That doesn't create a very welcoming environment and is a tough first impression to make on an employee. Start by just communicating to the team that this person is joining on X day. They're going to do Y role within the team. And here are the reasons that I think that this hire is really important and why I'm really excited about this person. That will set the correct foundation for the relationships between this employee and all the rest of the team. The next is, set up whatever tools that they need access to on day one before day one. Things like payroll, things like email access, access to other systems that they'll need to take action on, like benefits. All these things can be dealt with before day one, and it'll make their first day a lot smoother if they can take care of some of that administrative stuff in advance, we would have a lot of employees join some startups that I've worked with where it was a scramble on the day of to get them Zoom access or to get them an email address, get them access to the knowledge base that the company used. And we'd have to message the founder or message some admin person and hope that they were available at that particular moment that the person was starting. It ended up being a major drag on a lot of employees' first days because there was quite a bit of time just spent waiting around for access to be granted, wherein we could have just taken care of this in advance. And sure, it would have required some forethought, but just one reminder to the right person to set up these tools for them in advance. And then on day one, they'll be ready to go and ready to actually do work and not just spend time onboarding to the tools. Another thing to do, block off your own schedule at not just day one, but hour one. Communicate with the person in advance to agree on a time that they're going to start, whether that's in person or remote, same thing. You should block off your own schedule such that you can be, as the hiring manager, the person to welcome them, the person to explain to them, here's what your first day is going to look like. Here's what your first week's going to look like. Here's what we want from you over the course of the first week. Spend a little time getting to know them as much as you didn't do that in the interview process already. Make sure you're the first person who interacts with them and make sure that they have set aside time where they're supposed to be a certain place, even if it's online, and they're supposed to be talking to a certain person, which is you. And that goes into the fourth thing just to think about is make sure the employee before day one knows where they're supposed to be and when. It's okay if you're going to have them start at 10 a.m. or 8 a.m. or whatever normally makes sense for the company, but do they know that? One thing that you may not realize is that oftentimes in the days leading up to a start date, many employees will be a little bit stressed and reaching out to HR or other areas of the organization or maybe even you. Or they might not be reaching out at all. They might just be internalizing the stress, thinking, I don't know where I'm supposed to be on day one. Do I just show up at 9 a.m.? Am I supposed to bring a laptop? Do I have things I need to do beforehand? If you can get in front of that, you're going to de-stress that first day and that experience prior to the first day. And it's going to help make a positive first impression on the employee such that they're not starting off on a bad note. Now, what about the actual contents of that first day and that first week? To me, the first N period of time, and I think generally this looks like a couple weeks for a new employee, should really be spent on ensuring that they have the correct relationships and interactions set up and the right context for them to be able to do their job effectively. I'm thinking of at a client of mine, we recently hired a head of sales. And that head of sales is going to need to have relationships with the product and engineering teams, with the customer support team, and of course, with the CEO to sort out sales strategy. So the product and engineering teams, they're going to need to work with the sales team to build out whatever features the customers want or need, or what problem. Build out the solutions to problems that the customers are experiencing. The head of sales is going to need a relationship with the customer support team to understand the problems that customers are experiencing and reasons maybe why people like the product as well, such that they can incorporate that information into their sales process. And then they're going to need a relationship with the CEO to agree on sales strategy. What types of customers are we going after? What are the key metrics we should agree are milestones that we want to achieve? And so in the first couple weeks, our goal with this new head of sales was to ensure that they had opportunities to build those relationships with those teams through one-on-ones, through team meetings, introduce themselves a bit to the org, have that org introduce themselves to this person, and get everyone off on a good foot. So that's the relationship piece. Identify who this person will need to know in the organization, basically. The second is context. So this new head of sales, they need to understand the history of product development. So they need to know what what has worked and what hasn't in the past, the reasons why certain features have been developed, or the reasons why the business runs in a certain way, or the business targets a certain type of customer or wants to target a certain type of customer. They need context on who's doing what work, what the priorities of the company are. They need context on some of the key work streams that might impact the sales process are, for example, this product needs to be in compliance with certain regulatory requirements in order to be sold to certain types of customers. A head of sales needs to understand where in the process of getting into compliance the company is, because that will inform who they first target or who their end users that they want to really go after should be. The other piece of building relationships is getting context on what each person is doing, what their priorities are, and then also context from leadership on what the expectations of them are. So what is the leadership team? So in this case, I'm a part-time chief operating officer for this company, or a fractional COO. What do the CEO and I expect of this head of sales? Do we have numbers in mind around revenue targets or units sold, around the types of customers we want to go after? Do we have expectations around who this person will need to hire? What good performance or bad performance looks like? All that context is really important for this new head of sales having the right information to be able to do their job effectively. Over the course of the first few weeks and really moving into the first month, what I would expect any good onboarding process to look like would be to go from very basic to much more narrow and role specific over time. The basics are helping them build the relationships that they need in order to do their job and getting them the information they need about what's expected of them in their job overall, and essentially helping them go from new employee to someone who knows enough to be impactful. And then over time, they've gotten the context on the role as well as the company. They've started to build those relationships that you have introduced for them across the company. And now you're going to narrow down more and more into the nitty-gritty nuts and bolts of what they're supposed to do in their role. That will go from high-level expectation setting to roadmap. What is it that they're supposed to be doing today, tomorrow, this week, this month, and building that together with them? And not just what tools do they need, which they should be introduced to at first, but also getting them the training and documentation they need in order to be a master of those tools that they need, and working with them regularly to ensure that they are making progress on the goals that you initially described. Some other best practices related to onboarding a new employee. One, having extremely frequent one-on-ones. The best thing that can happen is you and your new direct report spend a lot of time diving into the details of the role, answering the questions that they have that you had no idea that would even come up, build more of a rapport between the two of you, get to know each other a bit. The worst that happens if you set frequent one-on-ones is you don't need to use the time and you can both use it for other purposes. If you set regular one-on-ones, and when I say regular, I mean maybe even every day when a person is first starting, particularly if their role is a really strategically important one to the company, it may be too much of your time to be sustainable, but it'll be time really well spent in the near term to ensure that they have a space to ask their questions, that there is a regular opportunity to get FaceTime with you, and that you are getting them the information that they need so that they can be effective in their role. Next best practice, an onboarding buddy. This one sounds a little startup-y, if for lack of a better word. I think it works really well. You as a manager have one perspective on the company and the way that it works and the culture. Folks on your team are going to naturally have a different perspective. It may be reasonably aligned, but it may have some more nuance. And there may be pieces of the company's culture and way of working and the team that you are not privy to because you were in the position of manager and they are in the position of direct reports. It is therefore impossible for you to impart perfect context to a new employee to ensure that they can do their job well. And really, the only way to do that is by them getting information from their peers. Instead of having that go through back channels, as often happens at companies, people join the rumor mill and they hear about how the company actually works, you can formalize this process. One, it'll go a lot faster. And two, you'll ensure that they get the information they need from a source that you trust rather than from the quote unquote rumor mill that they would naturally be made privy to over the course of their time there. Assign them an onboarding buddy, someone who is in your team, but maybe in a different role, someone who's been there a while, someone who has demonstrated a penchant for helping and supporting and coaching in some way, someone who's relatively understanding and has a good attitude overall at work, relatively positive, someone who will be welcoming in the same way that you are trying to be, but someone who will also offer another perspective. This onboarding buddy is someone who they won't be directly reporting to, and certainly who doesn't directly report to them either, so that there's no conflicts of interest. They're just someone who's going to tell them a little bit more about how the company works, maybe help them understand some of the nitty-gritty around Zoom culture or how often people are really in the office, or is it typical for people to text each other or message each other on Slack or email, things that maybe you wouldn't know necessarily being in your role because you've operated a certain way, but certainly that your team has norms around. You can think about this as the person who will help them understand the actual norms of the team and the company, give them some best practices around benefits packages, other things that maybe you haven't thought a whole lot about, but can be quite relevant to a person who's joining. And someone who can be a trusted source for this new employee that they can ask questions to that maybe they wouldn't be comfortable asking you because you are their manager. This removes one of those barriers to them having the opportunity to ask the questions that they probably really need to. The last one I'll say is, as you onboard new employees and you inevitably work through some of these steps that I've talked about today, make a list of them. List all the tools that a new employee needs access to and who needs to give them access. Make a list of all of the people that a new employee on your team would need to meet. Make a list of all of the basics about the company that your new employee would need to know, and make a little template of all these things so that the next time you hire someone, you could just copy paste, make small adjustments for this new role or for changes that have been made in the company or the team, but such that you're not recreating it every time, so that it doesn't seem so daunting the next time that you onboard a new employee. You're not starting from scratch. You're literally just redoing the thing that you did last time and maybe improving on it, because instead of spending time figuring all these things out again, you can spend a little time reflecting on what went well about that onboarding, what didn't go so well. How do you know if your onboarding strategy is actually effective? There are a few different ways to look at this, and I'm sure an HR expert or someone with a master's in HR or something like that has a more academically oriented and informed opinion. But I can tell you that there are a few things that, at least from my somewhat informed perspective, having seen this happen in a bunch of companies and happen many times, indicate whether an onboarding process is good or bad. One indication that an onboarding process is effective is the length of time it takes before this person is running at full speed. And obviously, there's a lot of role-specific nuance to this, but generally, I would expect an employee to be at 80% effectiveness around the 3-month mark and around 95 to 100% effectiveness by the 6-month mark. If you feel like new employees are nowhere near either of those thresholds, then you probably have a lot to be desired about your onboarding process. If they're not achieving the results that you're expecting them to in the time that you're expecting them, it means that they're lacking information around either what's expected of them, which should have been taken care of in an onboarding process. They are lacking access to the tools or people that they need in order to do their job, also something that needs to be taken care of through an effective onboarding process, or they are lacking the knowledge that they need to do their job, which in part should have been taken care of by your filtering for the right person in your hiring process, but definitely needs to be taken care of in terms of subject matter expertise that's related to your own company through an effective onboarding process. If any of those three things are not super effective in your onboarding process, then what will inevitably result is new team members not ramping up particularly quickly. Another indicator that your onboarding strategy is effective is, I'm not going to remember the exact phrase, but it's something equivalent to a honeymoon period. Whenever a new employee joined the company, there's a bit of a honeymoon period where they haven't experienced some of the downsides that inevitably come with any company. They're just excited about the new role. It's new. It's interesting. They came off a great interview process. They're really excited about the work. There's somewhat of a honeymoon phase. In that honeymoon phase, I've seen it last upwards of a year. If you check in with an employee at the 6-month mark, gauge their satisfaction. You could even have this be just an automated survey that goes out around that time. The honeymoon period should mean that if an onboarding process is done even reasonably well, the average new employee is going to be the happiest employee at your company. If you are seeing through these survey results that cohort is not the happiest group at your company, that is possibly cause for concern. It means that something went wrong in their onboarding process or in their experience of the company. And even despite the honeymoon phase, meaning that their bias will be towards being happy in their role, something about the onboarding process or their early experiences has been not ideal, which can all be pretty much tied back to an onboarding process. By the same token, there may be indicators from the rest of the team around the success of the onboarding process. In the teams I've worked in at companies that had the worst onboarding processes, that had the manager that armed themselves the least with onboarding processes and tools and check-ins for their new hires, the teams were the ones who indicated that they were unhappy with these new employees. And it makes sense. These new employees required resources to bring on board. There was a long interview process. They take resources from the team in terms of getting them up to speed. If they're not producing at some expected rate, and if they're not performing in line with the cultural norms of the team, it's the rest of the team who's going to feel that the most. And so a check-in with the rest of your team around the ramp-up process for a new employee will yield interesting results and probably be very tieable to how good your onboarding process was. On the most thorough onboarding processes, the most well thought through ones, team members surrounding that new employee will be really happy with the impact they're making and be really happy with the way that they've assimilated to the team culture and norms. In onboarding processes that leave a lot to be desired, they will feel that that employee is not delivering at the expected rate or is not a cultural member of the team in the way that they would expect a new person to become. The last topic I'll mention today is special considerations if you're remote. I think there are some major differences between onboarding a new employee in an in-person environment versus a remote one. And when I say remote, I don't mean hybrid, I mean fully remote. If there's any piece of the role that's regularly in person, I consider that, at least for onboarding purposes, to be an in-person role. But if a role is fully remote, that comes with a different set of experiences and sometimes expectations that you need to manage in a way that is bespoke for that type of role. One is the relationship building will be more challenging. You might have experienced this. Zoom one-on-ones that are introductory are definitely more awkward on average than in-person introductions. You need to account for that probably by having more small group or full team interactions prior to the one-on-ones occurring. When there is a team on Zoom, there's less pressure for any one individual to be interacting. And Zoom is not a natural place for people to be interacting anyway. That's one thing to consider, is just the makeup of the initial meetings and interactions that that person has with team members. Another consideration is how well they will come to understand the cultural norms of the team and the company. It will be a lot less obvious to them some of the nuance there. It may not be quite as clear how meetings are typically scheduled, how communication is typically done about what work is happening. It may not be clear what's expected of them in terms of their own communication. It may not be clear what the right relationships are that they need to be forming quite as much as when you're just seated next to a bunch of people in an office or any sort of place where work is done in person. These are all things to consider. Someone who's permanently remote, it may be tremendously beneficial to bring them on site for some period of time early. And I mean, like in the first month of their, within the first month of them joining the company, it will help them get a lot of comfort in ways that it is impossible to get remotely, because it's just harder to read people. It's harder to gauge their tone, body language. It's harder to build rapport. So you can bring them in person, even for a brief period of time, such that they can get onboarded to the people and relationships that they need in order to be successful. That is almost always a worthwhile investment. The other thing is just the regular one-on-ones. I have found that with remote employees, because there's no separate interaction that happens on the side when you're remote, the same way that I might walk by someone at the office and talk to them briefly, it can help to have even more frequent one-on-ones, like a check-in at the beginning of the day. Okay, here's expectations for what you're going to do today. And end of the day, hey, let's talk through what happened today and what your experience is like, and reflect on what information you need now in order to take the next steps. Consider as a manager maybe even having more frequent one-on-ones. And then certainly it's even more important to have that onboarding mentor or buddy type person who they can access, because they're not naturally going to be able to go to others with questions the same way you might be able to when you're in person. That was a bit of an overview on effective onboarding of new employees. Hope that was helpful. And as always, appreciate your feedback and ideas for additional episodes. Thanks so much for listening to Management 101 with Max Weniker.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Management 101. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to subscribe and leave a comment or a review. That helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Once again, thanks for tuning in to Management 101, and we'll catch you in the next episode.